Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A dare we say entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Of course Ken Starr is defending the occupant during his impeachment trial in the Senate. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the same Ken Starr, who led the impeachment brigade against Bill Clinton in the late 1990s, showing himself to be a right-wing hack. And this is the same Ken Starr, who resigned in disgrace as Baylor University's president because he failed in taking sexual assault claims against his football team seriously. You'd think that example right there of abject failure would lead some, like Starr, to simply scurry away and never be heard from again. But not in today's culture, not in the corporate right-wing media world that we live in. No. And by the way, that's not hyperbole. The Washington Post recently released a story with the headline, Dershowitz and Starr may bring slightly more reality-based defense. That's serious. That's the Washington Post. Alan Dershowitz. Yes, the same Alan Dershowitz who once despised Ken Starr back during the Clinton impeachment days, and who is now embroiled in his own problems in the Jeffrey Epstein case, is considered more reality-based now by the Washington Post. And Ken Starr, who showed to be nothing but a right-wing political hack in the 90s, and followed that up by leaving Baylor University in shame, is also considered a man of high esteem by the Washington Post. We cannot be surprised by this, everyone. We just cannot be. The Epstein lawyer, who's now being sued for sexual assault, and the former Baylor University president, who didn't seem all that interested in curbing rape culture in his football program, these guys are now the occupant's main lawyers. It's a perfect fit for all three of them, wouldn't you say? So we can't be surprised by any of this. Hello, do you remember this voice? That's right, I'm Pat Johnston, host of the Left of Lansing podcast. Welcome to another podcast, and I know I haven't been around here in a few months, but still, this podcast is devoted to highlighting the burgeoning progressive movement that's happening in Michigan. It's a podcast devoted to bringing a light to those who are pressing progressive values to make Michigan a more tolerant, a more educated, a diverse, and a more prosperous state, both financially and culturally. But like I said, I have been away for a few months, and I apologize. I started this podcast 11 months ago, and for the first 7 months or so, I produced a weekly podcast, and I had so much fun doing it. However, by fall of last year, I'd say, my daytime job started to take more of my time as more responsibilities mounted, and they continued to mount, and they just continued to get piled further and further and higher, whatever you want to say. I just kept working more and more, and to be honest, I started to get burned out just a bit. It's not that I didn't want to keep talking about the issues. Trust me, I did. But by the time nighttime would roll around, especially by November, I was simply out of juice. I mean, I produce and I write, and I am obviously the main talent of this podcast. So it is a lot of work, but I knew that going into this whole thing. So I'm not trying to, you know, complain about things. Life is okay for the most part. But sometimes my brain and my body can only do so much. And when they're not exactly rolling at 100%, then I really don't feel like doing a podcast, because if I'm not giving 100%, I don't want you to have to sit and listen to a mediocre Pat Johnston. So I apologize for not producing a new podcast in a while. I'm not sure exactly how 2020 will look as far as how many times I'll be able to post a podcast per month, but I will try and I will do my best. I will do better at pushing myself because, everybody, we're on the brink here. This is a major, major, crucial election year. Yes, we've got to get the current occupant out of the White House. We all know that. But we've also got to do our best in helping Governor Whitmer get a blue state legislature in Michigan. We've seen how the destructive, DeVos-backed, right-wing Michigan Republican Party will do everything in its power to stop Governor Whitmer from passing her agenda. An agenda, by the way, that helped her win her 2018 election in a landslide. I mean, it was a landslide. We can't forget that. The people are on the progressive side here. This right-wing-led state legislature, though, refuses to acknowledge that we need more investments in education and the environment. And this legislature knows it cannot let the governor have her win on her top issue that she campaigned on back in 2018, fixing the damn roads. Trust me, House Speaker, wait, I can't bring a gun on a plane, Chatfield, and Senate Majority Mike Backcrap and St. Shirky are not going to give an inch on road funding. For those of you out there thinking that they will, you are fooling yourselves. That is not how the Republican Party works on the national basis, and that is definitely not how the right-wing Republican Party works here in Michigan. Don't worry, though. They will vote, however, to ban D&E abortions in Michigan, which is a commonly practiced second trimester procedure that's done if the fetus has no shot at quality life, and it's also done to protect the mother's health. Oh, but those anti-government Republicans here in Lansing will do everything in their power to punish women. You see, there's a ballot initiative that's collecting signatures to ban this kind of abortion procedure. And if it reaches the ballot, the state legislature then has about 40 days to vote on it. Here's the problem. Governor Whitmer can't stop it. It's out of her power. She can't do anything because by law or statute, the governor's signature is not needed on what is called an indirect initiative. And that's what this thing would be called. So the right-wing legislature will get to bypass the will of the people. They will vote to enact this abortion procedure ban, and you will not get a say either way. They will not let this get onto the ballot because they know it will lose, and it will lose big time. That's why they won't let it get on the ballot, because they don't care what the people think. They don't care what you think. They only care what they think. You do remember when they used to call President Obama a tyrant, right? I mean, you remember those days. All because he wanted to expand healthcare coverage? Remember, and I've said this over and over and over again, the Republican Party is Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is the Republican Party. And that is why we need to turn the state legislature in Lansing blue. We've got to switch it from red to blue, everybody. Yes, the presidential election is important. And we all think we know who the perfect or near-perfect candidate is to take down the occupant in November. I mean, the Michigan primary is less than 2 months away. But we've got other important primaries and general election races that we've got to win in November. We've got to do everything, and I mean everything in our power, to keep fighting, as Bobby Kennedy said, for the common good. Not only do we have to hold our victories from 2018, like Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin and Haley Stevens, but we've got to win some more congressional races to turn Michigan's delegation blue. State Representative and friend of the LOL podcast, John Hoadley, for example, is running to send longtime Republican Fred Upton into a much-needed retirement. Others like Anthony Figg is running to take down the Trump-loving corporatist John Molinar's seat in the 4th District. We need Senator Gary Peters to keep his seat, especially with Fox News host wannabe John James running against him this fall. And by the way, speaking of John James, he says that he backs the occupant 1,000%. Remember that? Late last year, we learned how the occupant must pay a $2 million fine in damages because the Trump Foundation misused funds. Let's repeat that again. The President of the United States must pay a fine of $2 million in damages because his foundation, his so-called charity foundation, misused funds. This is the President of the United States. I cannot stress that anymore. Now, the foundation held a charity event ostensibly for veterans in Iowa during the 2016 campaign, and those funds never went to veterans. Instead, they went to the occupants' campaign. Oh, those veterans groups eventually did get their money after media scrutiny, but the New York judge said that the original funds did not go to the intended parties being veterans. So this judge ordered the President of the United States, to pay a $2 million fine. On top of that, the occupant's children have to attend training classes to ensure something like this never happens again. So I have to ask, why are Republicans fighting for this guy? More importantly, why is John James, who's a veteran, fighting for this guy? So that's a major race happening this fall. Not only do we have the important Senate seat, not only do we have important congressional races this fall, but we've got to make more gains in the state legislature. Because as we've seen, if you want immediate change, you can get it in state races. Just look what happened when we passed the anti-gerrymandering initiative in 2018, or when we passed to make voting easier in 2018, or when we elected Governor Whitmer, or Attorney General Dana Nessel, or Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. That was huge, and we got immediate change. Just look at what happened, that despite the GOP's gerrymandering efforts, we scored some major victories in the state legislature and increased female representation in the legislature. But it cannot end there. It just cannot end there. We've got fantastic candidates who are running this year in 2020. We can flip the state legislature this year. So then by 2021, things will really start to roll here in Michigan. Last summer, I spoke with Julia Pulver. Julia has been involved in progressive politics for years, and as a registered nurse, she brings a fresh perspective on how we can solve the state's healthcare system while also standing up for women's health and reproductive rights. Now, Julia barely lost her bid at a state Senate seat back in 2018, but she decided to get back into the fight. She decided to fight for the common good by running for a state House seat here in 2020. We talked late last year, and I'd like to share our discussion coming up next on the Left of Lansing podcast. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your understanding. Back in a second.
He loves Michigan snow. He loves Michigan beer. He loves Michigan's lakes. And he really loves Michigan sports teams once they start winning again. It's
Pat Johnston
on the Left of Lansing podcast. You can hear the podcast on Apple Music, Spotify, Google, and especially on leftoflansing.com.
Right, it is the Left of Lansing podcast, and as always, you can send me your comments, adulation, or criticisms if you must, to leftoflansing@gmail.com or contact me on Twitter at leftoflansing. I always enjoy the discussions and the debate, and once in a while, I always will enjoy some good old smack talk. Now, last summer, I invited Julia Pulver on the podcast to give her expert opinions on the atrocious Michigan Chamber of Commerce-backed auto insurance reform bill that passed the state legislature and was later signed by Governor Whitmer. Now, Julia is a registered nurse, a nursing consultant, political activist, and former Democratic state Senate candidate. Julia fell just short, if you recall, in her bid to flip a state Senate seat from red to blue, losing that 15th district seat by just 3 percentage points, and she did it. She did by simply getting into the game. You know, everyone always complains that millennials are just sitting on the sidelines, but Julia does anything but sit on the sidelines. Now, I don't think she'll mind me saying this, but after we recorded the interview last summer, I told her that her voice, her energy, and her fight for progressive values is desperately needed in Lansing, and I was hoping that even though she lost a close race, that she would eventually decide to try once again. And let me remind you, too, that Julia's got a family, so as you parents know, that's already a full-time job. But I can't tell you how absolutely thrilled I was to see on Julia's Twitter feed that she was getting back into the game as she announced that she would run this time for the 39th District House seat in 2020. It's a seat that is held by first-term State House Republican Ryan Berman. Fellow progressives and fellow fighters who want to make Michigan a better place after 3 decades of Republican rule, it is my pleasure to introduce Julia Pulver back to the Left of Lansing podcast. Julia, welcome back and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Pat. I really appreciate you having me on.
So what ultimately led you to decide to run another campaign and this time for a House seat?
Well, I got to be honest. Losing is really tough. It's really hard. It takes a lot of things out of you, but the one thing it did not take out of me was the fact that I still care about all of those issues. I still care about my kids' education. I still care about our drinking water. I still care about health care, which, you know, has gone nowhere, really, for the longest time. I didn't stop caring about any of those things, and we haven't made any progress on any of those issues and many, many more that I hold most dear. So I don't have that part of my brain that lets me just switch off caring. And I definitely don't have that part of my personality that says it's okay to just sit by when you could be doing something. So I've done a lot of work in this community. I have laid a lot of groundwork in this district, and I just don't have it in me to stop. We got to keep pushing. We got to keep fighting for the things we really care about. It's not enough to just, at least for me, I mean, I can't speak for other people, but for me, it was not enough for me to just say, well, I did my best.
Right. No, that's a great point. And not to go back to the past, but is it true that you were outspent by something around 7-1 by your Republican state Senate opponent? Is that about right?
Yeah. You know, and it's not really the actual hard money that campaigns spend. It's all the dirty independent expenditures and soft money and dark money. Those who really wanted to defeat me had to spend, no hyperbole, $1 million to defeat me and to hold on to a seat that every other person who has a idea of what it takes to win elections would have never thought that they would have had to spend a dime on that race. Just, it goes to show you what happens when you take your claim, put your flag in the ground and say, no, this is where I live. This is my community. These are the things we all care about. And I'm not going to listen to people who tell me that that's an unwinnable district.
You know, before we move on, the 39th District, where is that exactly?
So that is West Bloomfield, Commerce, and Wixom.
Even though you were outspent, like you said, by lots of money, you still only lost by 3 percentage points. What were some of the lessons that you learned in that race that got you so close to the finish line that you want to utilize this time around in your state house race?
Well, just like anything that you do as an undertaking, you know, I'm relatively new to this, you know, in my like regular day job, my normal life, quote unquote, I'm still pretty much a political novice. I came from the world of healthcare. I had never done anything like this before 2016. And just like anything else you do in your life, it takes time and practice to get good at it. I think that's one of the things that we fall short on a lot of times. We recruit candidates who we think are really good candidates, but we don't spend a whole lot of time grooming them cycle over cycle so that they can actually get good at it and be ready to go at it again when they've got the lessons learned from the past races. And, you know, I think I definitely have lots of different, this went well, that didn't go well. And then, honestly, a big part of the battle is just name recognition. People have to know who you are. People vote for who they know and who they like in that order. So if people don't know who you are, they could like every single thing about you, but they don't know you. What's the saying, you know, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. So a lot of times you have to do the work of introducing yourself to the everybody in your district that you want to represent. And sometimes you have to do that multiple times. So that takes time. It takes effort. And if you do it right, you know, I think I'm proof positive that just putting in the hard work doesn't mean you have to raise $1 million. I certainly didn't spend $1 million to make them, you know, hold onto that seat, which is about 4,000 votes different. I don't know exactly how to put it. It's just you have to do the work, and it takes time. There's a lot of great stories we like to hear about novices who ran their first time and they beat these incumbents and they flip these seats for the first time in history, and that's fantastic, but that's not what happens most of the time. Most of the time, it takes people running multiple times, getting good at it, building up their bases, and doing that slow, painstaking work to actually make progress. So that's kind of where I'm at, and I feel pretty good. It's definitely a fight worth having, and I'm in it. 100%.
You bring up such a great point, Julia. We always hear about those elections in which the novice or the first timer gets in there and they're somehow able to win, sort of like what AOC was able to do in the Bronx. But there was a terrific documentary that was released, I believe it was on Netflix, called Crashing the Gates. I'm not sure if you had a chance to see it. But while it highlighted what she was able to achieve in the Bronx, it also showed the hard work that women who were getting politics for the first time and the work that they had to go through to just get name recognition, to get onto the ballot. And then, you know, they ultimately did lose in their races, but still they were able to at least get something started. I hear your point on that one, that sometimes it's not really, I'm not trying to look for a moral victory, but that you were able to at least shake things up the first time around, I think, is going to help you this time around. We're speaking with Julia Pulver, who is running as the Democratic nominee for the 39th District or the State House in 2020. Julia, you talked about how you had worked in healthcare here for a long time. You are an RN, and you're also a nursing consultant. What are some of the improvements you would like to see and that you will fight for if you do get into Lansing in 2021?
So my main focus, which makes sense, and my natural focus always is on healthcare. There's so much that we can do at the state level that will help people in real time very quickly access healthcare rather than waiting for a big, long, drawn-out national debate or policy of what can get implemented. You know, that needs to happen, and that will happen and is happening. In the meantime, we at the state really need to be opening up new avenues for people to get the care that they need now. We need to have more resources for people who are trying to access their insulin. You know, I work right now with many hospitals in rural areas of Michigan that struggle just to make sure that their patients can actually make it into their clinics, that they can physically get to their clinics. And then once they do, that they can actually fill the prescriptions for very basic generic frontline medications, like I said, like insulin, like inhalers, you know, inhaled corticosteroids, or like, you know, the long-term inhaled medications that people use to treat COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is insanely expensive. And so, you know, those people need help now. They needed help years ago, but there's so much that we could do, so much more that we could do and offer to people. Same thing with long-term care. I know I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but we still struggle with how to help people in Michigan age in place and stay in their homes instead of being forced into very expensive nursing homes. And really what they don't need is nursing level care. They just need help with their everyday activities of living, like going to the grocery store and getting dressed or making sure they don't fall. So, you know, there's so much that we could be doing that really honestly isn't a focus of anyone. And it's really one of the things that I really want to make sure that I'm pushing everyone on, including all the people who are my would-be colleagues.
You know, you bring up a great point there, Julia, that while the healthcare debate on the national level will march on here with this presidential election coming up, there are things that can happen on the state level at a faster pace, especially if you concentrate on just a couple of things. Do you think overall, though, that some kind of public insurance option is needed, whether it's Medicare for All or just a public option itself? I mean, is that something you would look at?
Oh, absolutely. There's no such thing as natural competition amongst insurance companies when it comes to health care. It's the most bizarre product. You know, you can't really negotiate. You can't really say, well, do I really need this? Do I not? Can I take 6 months and, you know, shop around like you would a car? You know, you can't treat buying your life, your very living, breathing body and its health into any other major purchase that you would make in your life, right?
Yeah.
So it's an incredibly different beast that we're talking about. And the only options you really have if you don't qualify for any sort of government insurance, like Medicare because of age or disability, or Medicaid because of income or some situation, then you're just stuck. You get to pay whatever they want you to pay and then some, and there's no alternative. We need that third alternative. It's the only way that we are going to actually be able to bring down costs and improve quality of care and improve access, because right now we have no alternative. We need an alternative. And, you know, I'm not saying that we need to, I know my choice would be for my family, but I also don't want to make, you know, the choice for everyone. It's kind of antithetical to my beliefs about everything. But to give people an actual alternative third option to say, you know what, this is what I think would be best. This is what I can afford. And this makes the most sense to me. And I can see sort of a natural progression toward that way if we reach a critical mass of everyone saying, hey, you know what? This actually is the most affordable. This is the thing that's giving me the most quality of care, that I'm actually able to do the preventative care that I need so that I don't end up in the ER. I don't end up in the hospital. I can make sure I stay healthy. Because you know what? Healthy people are cheap. That's the thing. Like, healthy people, they are cheap. Sick people are expensive, you know, so, and no one wants to be sick. So it, because we've had this evolution of insurance for your health, we've gotten to this point where we are poorer and sicker. It's just not sustainable for any sort of healthy society. So we have to come up with an alternative. And I truly believe that, like I said, once we sort of reach that critical mass, it really will just become obsolete, right? Most people will just see that it is really not the best option. But you know what? If those who do and they really want it, you know, extra insurance or extra coverage or something else, yeah, then, you know, yeah, I'd say go for it. But it shouldn't be the one thing that we all have to life or death depend on. And that's not even hyperbole. We're talking life and death.
True.
And you shouldn't have to be able to afford to survive.
You bring up another awesome point when you say that healthy people are cheaper. I wonder how long it's going to take for the business community to get a grasp on that concept. I'm not sure if they really have just yet.
Some have.
Yeah, some have.
Lots of companies, if you've noticed over the last 10, 15 years, a lot of corporations have really started focusing on wellness, right? They've got wellness programs for their employees. They've got different step challenges that their employees can take. They offer a lot of other services, and that's great. They also, though, have been stuck with these insurance companies, you know, buying these packages for their employees where the cost of insuring them is going up and up and up, which is why they also, you know, want to push these wellness incentives. But they're also hurting because of it.
Yeah.
And they have no other choice. Again, they have no other alternative. So think of how great this would even be for businesses in Michigan and how much it would attract businesses in Michigan if we could say, hey, you know what? Mm. You could offer this Michigan public option to your employees for, you know, a fraction of what it is that you're paying now to those, the for-profit companies. You'll still be ACA compliant, and you'll have, again, cheaper, healthier employees because they're able to, you know, they're not worried about their deductible so that they're not going into the doctor when they're sick and then their cough is not turning into a pneumonia and now they're, you know, actually in the hospital and they've missed a week of work. So I think if we could offer something like that as well, it would help businesses greatly. I mean, there'd be like one business, you know, industry that would not be super happy about it, but they've been doing just fine. And they'll probably do just fine for quite a while. I think it's time for the rest of us to be able to be fine for a while.
She's speaking too much common sense here. This is Julia Pulver. Julia Pulver is on the Left of Lansing podcast, and she is running to become the Democratic nominee for the 39th District State House seat. That's coming up here in 2020. All right, well, Julia, we've talked about health care here, and I just have a couple more minutes with you. Governor Whitmer, in her budget, is trying to address the need that we need to get back to reinvesting in our public schools again. And Republicans, of course, have other ideas like keeping the gravy train rolling toward for-profit charter schools. Julia, what's your position on for-profit charter schools, and what do you ultimately want to see Michigan do to improve its public education system?
The for-profit charter school industry has completely abused any of the trust that was originally put in. Like, the original intent, I understood, was the idea of, you know, offering an alternative education environment for children who maybe didn't learn the same way or the best way in traditional schools, still needed to have that education done. And it was meant to really, you know, sort of relax some of the regulations while also meeting the needs of the children of Michigan. And that really good original intent, or at least, you know, what it was supposed to be, the original intent, has just been so greatly abused and misused and become so fraudulent that it is just completely irresponsible to say that we can continue on the way that we are doing. Other states have figured out how to do this without running, you know, the wild, wild west of charter school industry in the state of Michigan. One of the best analogies that I saw out there was Senator Dana Polhanke put out a great analogy, who she herself is a former teacher, said the Michigan Republicans, they love to brag year over year, budget over budget, about how they have given and invested the most in education ever in the history of being. And she made a great analogy. She said, you know, you had a dog and you were starving that dog to death, but every year you gave him a couple more little pellets of kibble. Could you really still brag that you were feeding that dog the most that you've ever fed them? And like, maybe that's true, but that dog's still starving and it's still going to die if you don't do something quickly. And I thought that was a perfect analogy, that it's not enough to numerically look at it and say, oh, sure, you know, we've done the most that we've ever done and aren't we great and pat us on the back. I think we have to look at it and say, wait a second, no, you're still underfunding to the tune of, you know, several thousand dollars per pupil, underfunding the students of Michigan. And that is not acceptable. And that such a failure to our promise to our children. It's unconstitutional. In our Michigan Constitution, our kids are guaranteed an education. Why are we doing this? We have not had a majority in Lansing that actually cares and doesn't just pay lip service to the idea of education in this state, or education for everyone. I should say they're still fine with education for, like, you know, certain kids. They're just not super invested in education for all of our kids. We just need, and the plain simple answer is, we need a majority back. We need majorities back of Democrats in the legislature that can work and actually give a budget to the governor, can work with the Attorney General's office, can work with the Secretary of State to actually work with all of these other entities who want to be doing all of these, you know, not even that radically left anymore. Like, I know we're on left of Lansing, but seriously, a lot of these issues are even just so far center, it's laughable that we are even having to fight these issues. That's my bottom line. That's my whole pitch and plea is, we need a majority if we want to ever get anything done, if we want to start to heal from all of the damage that has been done to our state from this Republican majority. It's for the longest time. We just got to win.
How can people find a way to help volunteer for your campaign if they like to do so?
Real easy. Go to juliapulver.com. It's my website. You can sign up to volunteer. You can donate. We run on just very grassroots donations and promise that, you know, we use all of our money very wisely. I'm a mom. I run a household. You know, I have a budget for what I want to spend, and I raise for that budget, and I spend what we need to spend to win. You know, I know a lot of people are worried about fundraising, that it's just endless, and we do fundraising just to keep up with the Joneses, and, you know, that's not how I operate. So every dollar you contribute gets used to its maximum on my campaign. You can also follow me on Twitter or on Facebook at Vote Pulver, and I'm very accessible. So if you want to talk about something, just let me know, and be happy to talk about it.
Julia, you don't have to worry about anybody worrying about how you're going to spend their money, because progressives have shown through the years, history has shown, Julia, as you well know, that when it comes to budgeting, progressives are far better than conservatives. Julia, good luck with everything. We will keep in touch, and I hope that you'll come back again in the future here on the Left of Lansing podcast.
Anytime. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat Johnston shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com. The Left of Lansing podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, and of course on leftoflansing.com. Word has it, that's Rick Snyder's favorite site. Now, back to Pat Johnston.
Special thanks again to Julia Pulver for being a guest on this week's podcast. And even if you don't live in the 39th District, which covers parts of Oakland County, including West Bloomfield Township, Commerce Township, and Wixom, please visit Ms. Pulver's site at juliapulver.com. I'll include that link on leftoflansing.com along with this week's podcast posting. I mean, we would all love to have Julia's intelligence and compassion in our state legislature, would we not? Time for the Left of Lansing Last Call. Hexavalent chromium. That's the cancer-causing agent found oozing out onto the I-696 highway in Madison Heights last month, you remember? Michigan environmental officials have determined that the green ooze came from the basement of an electroplanting factory on 10 Mile Road, which the EPA shut down back in 2016 over violations. In fact, the state then shut down Electroplanting Services Incorporated due to improper storage of hazardous waste. Last February, the company's owner, Gary Sayers, pled guilty for this illegal activity. He was sentenced to a year in prison, and Sayers was also ordered to pay a $1.5 million fine and cleanup costs. But while officials are cleaning up the green ooze, we're learning more, not just on how this company repeatedly broke the law, but how Michigan could not finish cleaning up the illegally stored cancer-causing agent because the state did not have the money to clean it up. The EPA started to clean the site, removing some 37,000 gallons of the substance from the ground. But then the EPA turned the rest of the cleanup effort to the state of Michigan back in January of 2018. And according to the Bridge magazine, Michigan has 7,300 toxic sites, but we don't have enough money to clean those sites, including this one in Madison Heights. And that's what decades of right-wing leadership brings us, everybody. To right-wing Republicans, tax cuts to the donor base, and gutting environmental protections in the name of higher corporate profits are just a few of the reasons why they're sent to Lansing. And then they will have the nerve to act all surprised whenever green ooze spills out onto a highway or when PFAS are discovered in their drinking water. This is the kind of environment that they have created. Thankfully, Governor Gretchen Whitmer is considering pressing more charges against Sayers. And on top of that, she's calling on the right-wing Republican legislature to start giving environmental officials the resources that they need now. And don't forget, Democratic State Senator Jeff Irwin has introduced a Make Polluters Pay bill. It's a common-sense bill. I mean, why should we have to pay for the wrongdoings of company or corporate polluters? See, this is what happens when you put progressives into office. They will fight for the people while Republicans do what their corporate donor base tells them to do. You know, it always amazes me. It just simply amazes me. Corporate Republicans gut environmental protections for years. Then, when corporations pollute, conservatives blame the governmental institutions they gutted for years for not doing enough. Then, they argue how yet it's another example of how government fails the people. Then, they continue to pass more laws that empower corporations to pollute while taxpayers have to pay for the eventual cleanup. Man, that's such a racket. How's that working for us?
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you are hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to my favorite progressive voice, Pat Johnston.
You know, it felt great to be back in the saddle again. That'll do it for another edition of the Left of Lansing podcast. Send me an email and tell me what you think. And if you believe there's an issue I should highlight or someone I should interview, please let me know. Again, that's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Don't forget, I'm always providing daily comments on the Twitter machine. Happy Impeachment Week, everyone. But remember, this fight is only beginning. Stay focused, stay informed, and most of all, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.